The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Broadcasting from Resistance Headquarters, relentlessly fighting back against the clown dictator and his regime of deplorables.
Never give up, never surrender.
This is the Bob Zeska Show, presented by BubbleGenius.com.
From our nation's capital, it is Wednesday, April 24, 2019, and this is the Bob Zeska Show, interviews from Earth One. My guest today is Scott Dworkin, one of the go-to voices covering the Trump crisis and the ongoing Russiagate story. Scott's the co-founder of the Democratic Coalition, home of the Trump Leaks research team, and the effort to convince Republicans to support the impeachment of Donald Trump. Links in the description below. If you like what you hear today, please support this podcast by subscribing at BobZeskaShow.com. By the way, we started a conversation today with a personal aspect of Scott's life, but at his request, I trimmed it out of the show because, yeah, Scott's been on the receiving end of death threats due to his activism. So bear that in mind as we talk with the great Scott Dworkin. Do you get a lot of threats?
Yeah. I mean, like especially after yesterday when we started our Republicans for impeachment campaign.
Yeah.
But, you know, specifically after March of 2017, when the Russian embassy in the UK tweeted out, here's to people like Funder, as in my handle on Twitter, for calling Trump Putin's puppet, something along those lines. So that really, you know, that provoked some trolling. Wow. At a massive level. And, you know, it is what it is. It's part of the job nowadays.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a lot of people that like to issue threats. And, you know, there's a lot of different things that we have to do to make sure that, you know, everything is kind of secure. But luckily, a lot of the stuff that we do is in real time. So even if someone were to, like, hack me nowadays, you know, they're not going to find much, you know, that they, but yeah, we've had to do a lot of security measures, in regards to everything, like top to bottom. There's a lot of events I've had to not go to because, they had assessed it to be a risk, and there's, different, family events and things like that where, you know, I laid low basically.
Yeah.
I'm not really on invitations anymore. Like a lot of people always wanted to be like, oh, you know, be on my host committee or whatever for this event. So I don't do that anymore because I don't want to draw attention. Because what'll happen is even if it draws people in, it backfires because there's always somebody who's a little Looney Tunes. And we're just careful. And it's just a different, you know, it's a different world now. But I can definitely tell you it is timed with his attacks. Like it's definitely whenever he comes out and attacks media in general or the Russian narrative or, you know, so it's basically every day. So
yeah, it's funny because since the Barr memo, since March 24th, I have been receiving almost every day one of those spear phishing emails where it's the Bitcoin one. It's the one that says, we've infiltrated your email. We've infiltrated your computer. We're going to turn on your webcam. And then we're going to and if you don't pay us this Bitcoin amount, and they give the Bitcoin number, it says that we're going to show the world what you've been surfing on Pornhub or whatever. That's like, that's basically like the threat. And so of course it's bogus, and of course it's a obvious attack trying to get information rather right. than actually having attained information.
Yeah, I mean, when I first dug in, I guess the anti-Trump movement, when we started pushing in, I guess it was April of 2016.
Yeah.
There wasn't much in regards to like a lot of pushback because it wasn't a big movement. People didn't think he could win, and then he started gaining steam, and so did we.
Yeah.
And I think over time, it's as we've gotten larger and a louder voice, it's gotten much worse. But when one of the reasons we started overall is because Hillary was getting threatened, and we did not think that it was, well, first of all, it wasn't right. A lot of those threats were illegal. Nobody was doing anything in regard. We couldn't figure out a way to push back against those threats. And so we finally, there was this guy, I think his name is Michael Folk, and he's a delegate that's in a state rep in West Virginia. And he also is a pilot for a commercial airline. And so we came up with a strategy of, okay, he said that Hillary should be hung on the mall. And we're like, okay, that's like really descriptive. Like maybe we'll file a simple like report, like we'll report him to the Secret Service.
Yeah.
And so we did that. And then we announced the fact, like we were like, let's do a press release and see if anybody cares.
Right.
And that got coverage locally and nationally. And we were like, oh, we got something here. And it got him suspended from his job.
Mm-hmm.
There was an investigation done because of it. And I believe he was censured in the West Virginia House. Right then, it started off with threats. It wasn't against us, but then it eventually, came into different threats, whether it's, attacks, hit pieces or something like that, that are linked to Heritage Foundation and obviously Breitbart and others. They try and paint that cloud of like murkiness to try and make it so that you're a doubted person or like somebody should not take you as credible. They try to assault every part of your character and career. So you really have to have, first of all, you can't be bought. Like that's one of the most important things, which I've gotten job offers, which were inappropriate that were linked to Trump. a ridiculous upfront marketing consultant jobs.
Yeah.
And it's absurd.
Wait a minute. I mean, how do you say, how are they attached to Trump? These are like trolls or something offering you jobs that are bogus, or what do you say?
No. There were financial firms that offered me jobs. And it was the same kind of job where it'd be marketing consultants or like marketing strategist.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, what's the actual role? I mean, and there's some of them that offered hundreds of thousands of dollars upfront for a signing bonus. And then guess what's in the paperwork? You cannot use social media unless pre-approved.
Oh, gotcha. And, yeah.
Uh-huh.
You know,
I figure it's an attempt to muzzle. But yeah, all the threats, it sucks, but it's part of, it is what it is. Like, we deal with it.
Yep.
I pass it off and then the appropriate authorities deal with, whoever decided to make that threat.
Is that an effective process? Is the system set up well enough to be able to handle the digital world now and the threats that are involved? Because it seems like with more and more people having just direct visibility, direct connections, whether it's celebrities or those of us who have a reasonable following on Twitter and so on, it seems like the system isn't necessarily lined up to be able to deal with what is very clearly, an epidemic of people getting harassed and threatened online. Certainly the social media platforms aren't equipped to handle it. In your experience, has the system been able to help you out along these lines? I mean, given the volume of threats that you receive?
Yeah, and we've been meeting with social media companies to work on a lot of different things with them, mm-hmm. Including if they like suspend a progressive account or, you know, something along those lines. So we met with Facebook recently and, about taking down progressive groups and, banning some or taking down their pages. It's been a big problem in the past. They have gotten, especially Twitter, has gotten much better, more responsive. Mm. There's a lot of fake accounts that'll go up and they'll take my picture and then they'll act like they're me, but what they'll do is they won't post anything. They'll just start DMing people and act like it's me. And people, there have been people who have blocked me that were friends because they thought that I told them to F off.
Oh, God.
There's different kinds of harassment and things like that. But I'd say Twitter, like recently, they've been phenomenal. Like, no joke, in regards to this specific issue, they've been great at handling any threats. They also make it very easy now. Like when you submit a report of a death threat, they give you a form that is emailed to yourself that you can print out or you can email to the authorities. Makes it easier, so it's all kind of laid out, so you don't have to worry about some of the other steps.
Yeah.
And so that's been helpful, but that's only when it's like very explicit, very real, and it's a real person. Mm-hmm. That's when we, if it's just like a bot or some random person and it's not very explicit, if they're like, I'm going to hold you accountable, like that's not something. But if they say they're going to chop my head off and put it in my front yard,
yeah,
that's explicit. And that is one that I've got.
You know, it's amazing how tenacious some of these people are. I mean, I did a cartoon in the year 2000. I did a cartoon 19 years ago, and I swear to God, I still get hate mail because of that cartoon 19 years later. And I'm not making that up. I'm not exaggerating. It's just the tenacity is really, really impressive if you think about it. That's a weird way to look at it, but it really is. And in the meantime, you were mentioning Facebook, and it seems to me as if Facebook and the hatred of Facebook is the last thing that I think both sides can kind of agree on, right? Like the conservatives and the Trumpers, they're really pissed off about Facebook, and we're all on the left pissed off about Facebook because of everything that's been going on. Did you actually know anyone who got caught up in that purge last fall where, I don't know, it was a couple hundred, maybe a few hundred liberal pages got taken down? I know Matt Taibbi wrote something about it in Rolling Stone back mm-hmm. then. Taibbi's integrity notwithstanding, he did cover it extensively, and there were a few articles along those lines. Do you know anyone who got swept up in that?
Yeah, I mean, those are specifically who we got together. Mm-hmm. I think Renato Mariotti.
Oh, yeah.
He attended the meeting. He's a lawyer, so he was helpful to be there. Mm-hmm. We had some people from that are Hill advisors and, mm-hmm. you know, it was a very serious meeting specifically about, I think Reverb Press was there as well.
Oh, yeah.
Story. They were all talking about how there were different pages that were taken down. And what we came up with Facebook was a more streamlined process. Now, we had a post that we put up, and it was flagged for hate postings or something like that. So we got basically blocked. Our reach went down to I think it went down by like 1/100th or something like that. It was crazy. It dropped we didn't even exist at that point.
Oh my God.
So it was a great opportunity. That was right after we met too. And it was not hate mail. It was something that a link was posted on other, still on Facebook, and it was John Pavlovich. It was about how it was about white people too. It was the funny kind of content anyways. So they flagged it. And there wasn't really an appeal process, and we didn't really know what was going on. We didn't even know that we were just like, is our page broken? Like, you know, and we had just met with them. And now that I'm thinking of the timing, that is questionable.
Yeah.
So I would say it, but we worked through it directly with Facebook, and we did come up with not only a process, where we can move forward for other groups, but also a contact. And those are the two main things that, you know, we need is that kind of pipeline so that we can have some kind of sense of order around, you know, why are you taking this page down? What's the appeals process? Like, what is the warning system? You know, how do we know what is at what level? Like, you know, what can we do to make it so that we don't get taken down? Like, what are the rules?
Yeah.
And they really didn't, it's kind of like the Wizard of Oz it's been, you know, somebody's behind there and they're like, I'll take this down. And then, you know, it's kind of random, it seems. And, and so we worked it out and they had fully restored our page via this process. And it turned out to be, you know, successful recovery.
Yeah.
So at least we had, you know, we've had success, and that's recent. That's like a month ago, I think. Or month or two ago. I can't remember. Everything's running together now with the Mueller report release.
Yes, and as always.
But it was successful, and so I'm happy finally with at least having the contact, and also doing a follow-up meeting soon. So they're trying, and that's what matters to me.
Yeah.
And I obviously things move slowly because they want to be super careful. A lot of people are angry and you know, they're careful of what they pledge and what they can move forward with. But they're doing something. And so we're trying to make sure that it doesn't happen again. And so we are working on it. And now I will say that we're in talks with a conservative who's like the same kind of person like me in doing a joint sort of press release. And we also are, I believe there's going to be hearings about regulating social media networks or something, breaking them up. I can't remember exactly what they described it as, but
which you actually know, Trump was talking about.
Agree on.
Yeah, Trump was talking about that yesterday with regard to Twitter, wasn't he? He was saying that Twitter, he was threatening Twitter with regulation, and I guess this was before his meeting with Jack. But I mean, the strange thing to me is that it's not okay to regulate mining companies that dump poison into our rivers and streams, but it is okay to regulate Twitter because Donald Trump doesn't understand algorithms. That's a weird bit of policy jujitsu there by Donald Trump, I think. But I mean, the question I want to ask is, in your communication with social media and especially Facebook, in this meeting that you had with Renato and some of the others, do you get the sense that Facebook is equipped to prevent another Russian attack, which is surely going to at least be attempted in 2020, or if not already started? Have they given you any indication whatsoever whether or not they're going to be deploying any new systems to weed out the Russians?
They say it's a priority. I don't know what they're doing about it. You know, I know just the public knowledge stuff, but it has been an issue that we addressed. But it's not, you know, overall in all social media networks, I think are not doing their part.
Yeah.
And a lot of that has to do with them needing users, and users being the number of users, obviously gauging how much money they bring in a lot of times. So it, you know, I think the quality of the user, and there's a couple different things that they can do. One is they can have a verification process for people, which is multi-leveled. So there's people who are public personalities who have the blue check mark, and then they can probably have like a gray check mark for people who submit their driver's licenses or, you know, a bill or something that proves that they're a real person.
Yeah.
And then they get a check or, you know, a different color check. That way, you know, you're communicating with a person, even if it's an alias, you know, that it's a real human being. And it, you know, I think they may not let aliases use for the gray check mark. Anyways, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So there's a couple different things that I think will be revealed before the election to help people understand. But I think the most important part of this whole thing is people realizing that everything that happens online for the most part affects you in real life.
Mm-hmm.
It affects the way you think, it affects the way you vote. And it affects, you know, how you perceive our country overall.
Yeah.
And it not only, you know, there's not going to be much, I don't think, unless, you know, the United States government steps in and takes a leading role like they should be, which they're not, in fighting the Russians, then, you know, we're in big trouble.
Yeah.
And, you know, because the second they can turn off power, second they do it, you know, people are going to go crazy. And that's what we got. You know, there's a bunch, and that links back to the internet and different attacks. But I would say, man, it's no. The answer is no. None of the social networks are doing what they should be yet. But I think that there's a lot of ideas floating around of what they could do. The best news is Americans realize now that not everything online is real.
Right.
Not everything, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, they're not going to take every single person. And I think the Mueller report helped with that.
I mean, do you really think that people are up to speed with the dangers of social media along those lines? The ability, are people equipped with the ability to be able to weed out the fake news and the Russian memes and all of that crap on their own? I mean, without sort of Facebook or Twitter doing their jobs? Because I get the sense, especially reading through volume one of the Mueller report, the subtext in all of this is that none of this would have worked the way it worked, especially with the IRA's efforts on social media, had it not been for millions of Americans playing along, whether wittingly or unwittingly, and spreading all that crap around throughout the 2016 process. And my fear is that the Russians are going to come up with more and more sophisticated processes. I know, like, Andrea Chalupa was talking about AI being involved at some point in the very, very near future with regard to Russia. I mean, are people going to be able to keep up with the increased sophistication of these cyber attacks?
No. You know, I think when it, like, they're going to be able to, they can do it now, actually, where they can make a video with audio. And it looks like the person, you know what I mean? Like, it can actually, it's a fake video.
Oh yeah. Yeah. True fakes. Is it called like true fakes where they're able to do like a face manipulation where they're able to swap someone's face onto someone else's body? And then,
yes.
Yeah. That's horrifying.
Yeah, and I mean, that's, and so you have that, and then you come up with a fake news site, like a website or whatever. You put some money behind it and you register that in the United States with, you know, American actors, and, you know, that's how simple it can be.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, so it just takes, you know, money, for people to be able to infiltrate probably pretty much anything. And that's, you know, that's, where the duty lies, I guess, is on the person of behind the computer. And we can't depend on the social media networks to keep up to date, because again, they have the balance of money and users and everything. And so we have to look out for our best interest. Maybe, you know, they could do a better job of us being able to filter our information, or also, again, not keeping an eye on trends. Like, I keep an eye on trends all day, where, you know, it's like, if something gets a certain amount of retweets under a certain hashtag, I get notified about it. And I think they should be able to do the same thing where they actually track and see if some garbage is coming out. They should have the responsibility of, you know, legally, I think, they should have the responsibility of taking it down or alerting people, you know, below it. Like, this is parody or this is satire or whatever. You know, I'm not saying that they muzzle users because there's going to be real people sending out, you know, kooky stuff that's real. Like, it's really, you know, it's such a hard line because it's like freedom of speech versus our safety and a threat to, you know, our national security. No one is doing enough. The only people who are doing anything seems to be at least Democrats in trying to at least get as much information out there about what happened so that we can try and prevent it from happening again. But again, you know, the developments in technology and what they're doing and how they've manipulated it, we don't know if some, I mean, I know that they've infiltrated the resistance with a lot of these FBR accounts. A lot of those are real, obviously, but there are some that have not been. You know, so there's going to be attempts. We need to be policing, you know, the social networks ourselves, and then draw attention to things that are false in narrative. And I think we've become really probably the best in the world, Americans, at figuring that out. But also, people love, I guess they think of it as like wrestling. Like, people love the controversy sometimes and like controversial tweets. I mean, so it's again a balance of like entertainment versus reality and politics and, you know, real news versus fake news. But they can do better. That's for sure. So can we.
Right. And, you know, it's interesting you say that because it seems to me as if the Trump supporters by and large are the consequence of what amounts to, I think, a mass delusion. I think what we're seeing here are, you know, it's a political movement based around nonsense and gibberish that, I mean, more specifically, propaganda orchestrated by Fox News Channel, orchestrated by hostile foreign governments and pumped into the American bloodstream. And the thing that makes it so viable is it's also combined with this notion in this country that politics is like sports. I mean, we see it all the time, whether it's on the Sunday shows or on the cable news shows, all these sports metaphors, to the point where I think a lot of Americans believe that politics is this consequence-free Sunday tournament that they just watch, or like a WWE match or something like that, where you watch the both sides and we're supporting this side and we're against that side no matter what happens, because this is our team and that's their team. And so what happens is the consequences of politics aren't taken seriously anymore. They're not respected anymore. And I don't think it's even respected by the president of the United States anymore. I think Donald Trump is someone who does not respect the real world implications of the decisions that he makes, where everything is about the shovel fight rather than, oh, we're going to create this policy and that's going to benefit certain Americans. Now, there's this attitude among a significant, I would say up to 62 million American voters, believe that this is now all about sticking it to the other side. We're going to throw this monkey with a machine gun into the works, and just to piss off those people, not even realizing all of the negative ramifications, all the way down from healthcare to even healthcare for coal miners, for God's sake. It seems like a really long way to go and a really stupid and naive process that has been only amplified by the use of social media and a lot of the fake news and propaganda that's been on social media. I mean, is that kind of your takeaway? How do you peg this red hat movement that follows Donald Trump and supports him no matter what the hell happens?
I think some of the support that he claims to have does not exist. Mm-hmm. But there's obviously a large amount of people who still support him. I don't what I've seen is that a lot of people who are involved with it don't have, I guess, what's the best way to say this? I would say that they don't, they're less educated.
Yeah.
They are overworked a lot of times. Yeah. And so they're not paying attention to much else, if anything else. Mm-hmm. I have one of my best friend's moms said she's a big fan of Hannity and all that nonsense. She's like, are you nervous about, you know, everything? And I'm like, well, you know, I think it worked out well. And she's like, no, like, aren't you going to probably face indictment for carrying that fake Russia story? And I just kind of looked at her. I was like, what are you talking about?
What?
she said, oh, well, you talked about that Russian collusion. Aren't you going to get in trouble for that? And
oh,
I was like, no.
God.
First of all, I talked about the Trump Russian ties. I talked about all of his business ties for the last, you know, 2.5-3 years. And so there's nothing there that's like a lie. Like, you can't lie about this photo of him in Qatar or like, you know, in Saudi Arabia or doing business in Russia. Like, you can't, it's Don Jr.'s words in this video that we found, da, 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 da. So it was just kind of shocked me that somebody was so gullible and willing to be, and at the same time, she was not willing to be bent the other way, even with explaining everything, proof in front of her. And this is what a cult is.
Yeah.
I've seen cult members before, and it's the blind stare. They're not even listening. And that's a big problem because, but I will say that when people exit, there's this look of shame mm-hmm. On their face. And I try to embrace them as like, listen, what's done is done. Yeah. Welcome. Mm-hmm. You know, if they're genuine about it, some people are fakers and try to act like they switch just to get more retweets.
Yeah.
But no, it's definitely, there's a lot of, it's like the reality they want. Mm-hmm. It's not the reality that's real.
Yeah.
And so I guess they have their own contrived reality, like where they come up with this, they watch what they want on their angle. They listen to what they want on their angle and they live in that and they don't accept anything else.
Yeah.
And that is dangerous. That's dangerous as heck.
Let me ask you this. And this is an odd question. And I'm kind of playing devil's advocate when I ask this question. You know, I have an observation, sort of a maxim about following all of Trump's bullshit. And that maxim is Trump always makes things worse for Trump. No matter what he does, no matter what he says, no matter what he decides, ultimately, it's going to manifest bad news for Donald Trump, some sort of negative repercussion. But at the same time, do you see the events of the last few weeks having played out? I mean, the obvious details of the Mueller report aside, the political strategy by the president, have you seen that playing out to his benefit? I mean, was he able to, by hiring William Barr in, you know, maybe, what was it, 40 days ago, William Barr was confirmed. It was a little more than that, but just roughly 40, 50 days ago, William Barr was confirmed right before Mueller gets ready to drop the report. And then Barr comes out and does this whole smoke and mirrors job with the memo and the a press conference and so on, preempting the actual details of the report. Was this something that Trump came up with, wielded out, and it seemed to have at least given the impression to some of the people in, for example, cable news media to, I guess this is kind of over now, isn't it? Or, isn't there going to be a reckoning now because all these people were wrong? And they actually were able to run with that for a couple of weeks. So I guess my question is ultimately, was this Trump kind of playing it the right way for his own obvious and nefarious benefit?
Absolutely. And it will be to his eventual detriment, I would assume,
yeah.
Because, I think the press conference backfired. I think he took the fourth question and it was about, do you think it's bad that you're like kowtowing to the president or what? I can't remember what the question was, but it was like acting like you're Trump's attorney. Do you think that's appropriate? And he was like, I'm done here. And he left. And I was like, okay, well, that was sad and pathetic. So I don't think that. I think long term, it's a terrible, like it's going to bite them in the butt. But I think in the short term, it helped kind of pour some water on the Mueller report.
Yeah.
And, you know, that combined with it being dropped over a holiday weekend, you know, and I mean, every part of it was just a propaganda campaign trying to divert your attention from it, combined with, oh, this whole thing is garbage. And you know, I just, they're playing with fire because, you know, you don't want to make Speaker Pelosi angry. And I would believe that this would be one of those things that makes her angry. You know, it's a very dangerous game. So I will say that obviously the truth will come out, and whether they like it or not, Democrats are investigating and going to hold hearings, whether they like it or not. They will hold people in contempt, and they'll find out different ways to do it so they don't have to go to court for years. They'll figure out a way. And you know, they have the problem is the other side is willing to break the law.
Yeah.
And they have the law on their side. So, you know, what do you do when that happens? I mean, a DOJ official refused to testify.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, well, you've been subpoenaed, dude. Like, what are you talking about? Like, you're in your DOJ. Like, what are you, like, that's like, it's just mind boggling. And the AG to go out there like that, you know, it makes you miss Jeff Sessions.
And it's, yeah, no kidding.
You know what I mean? who I think saved. I mean, if you think about it, I think he knew that he was kind of set up by Trump or Russians trying to link him. Because he only had a few meetings with the ambassador, and it was basically about nothing.
Yeah, according
and
to
I think
report,
he realized
that,
he's like, I think he cornered me. Because think about who hired Mueller. It was like, I think it was a combination of Sessions and Rosenstein, but like, you know, a bunch of Republicans. It's not, and Mueller's a Republican. Everybody else, for the most part, not on the investigations team, but like a lot of FBI agents are Republicans. Comey. Republican.
Yeah, at least half of the 18 quote unquote conflicted Democrats or whatever the hell Trump calls, at least half of them are Republicans. I think a majority of them are Republicans, in fact.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and there's like three that donated like small amounts to Hillary and other campaigns.
Yeah, yeah.
But like I think the sensationalism and everything that he does, he tries to go to the max. So we try to push back to the max as much as possible. I think what backfired here is it brought more attention to the report, but again, he wanted to do that to try and muddy the waters with the report.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like they're playing really, really tight games. And I used to think they were, you know, brilliant PR people, that they had a plan. And what's truly terrifying is they don't.
No.
And that to me was shocking. I was like, oh my God. Like these people are monsters. Like they're literally lying about federal agents. The press secretary is sitting there lying about a federal agency to try and justify obstruction of justice. And it was just mind boggling. Like that sentence alone should boggle anybody's mind. So it really, in the long term, I think people eventually get sick of they'll either get bored with Trump and turn on him, but there is an expiration date. There's no way that this holds up forever because our country is going to get destroyed.
Yeah.
And by him, if he stays in power.
I mean, so, like, you know, it seems to me as if the Trump fatigue should have kicked in a long time ago, given the amount of visibility that he has beyond any president. I mean, you know, I've been studying the presidency for the last 30 years at least. And, you know, one of the conclusions I'm drawing from this whole goddamn mess is that, you know, Donald Trump, the president, should not be this visible. The president should never be in our faces this often. And one of the reasons is basic politics, because the president doesn't want to outlive his welcome. So, but it seems like Trump is really pushing the envelope on that front. I can't believe that the discussion of Trump fatigue hasn't started yet, but you know, it's a new era when none of the old rules apply anymore. And you know, along those lines, Scott, are we in the midst of a constitutional crisis now? with Trump and the administration denying every single oversight request and subpoena?
I'd say we were in a constitutional crisis when he was sworn in, when Russia helped him win, and he knew about it and then lied about it. You know, that's my like real view. All jokes aside, though, but I do believe that. In regards to now, I mean, it's ludicrous. So I don't think they understand how many whistleblowers have come forward. I don't think they understand how much evidence the House has outside of the Mueller report. I don't think they understand that more indictments are coming.
Yeah.
And so they live in this false world, but Manafort's in jail. You know what I mean? Yep. Like Flynn is going to get sentenced. I don't think he's going to face jail time. So whatever he told, obviously the parts that we saw are pretty damning. So it's just going to get worse. Like there are 14 investigations that were farmed out from just the Mueller report alone. There are, I think, 8 states that are criminally investigating. And then I think the state of New York, I'm not sure if that's criminal, it might be civil, but these are all things that you can't juggle all of these. You can't make deals with everybody. You can't pay everybody off. And some of these people who are either Democrats or Republicans, they know that if they're the one that, you know, can make it stick, you know, that's a parade, you know, that's a parade people would be willing to go to. That's not sports related.
Yeah. Tell me about these 14 investigations laid out in the Mueller report. How many of those are public? Because I think some of them are under seal, right?
Mm-hmm, that's correct. And I believe some of it involves WikiLeaks, and they're still actively investigating whether or not Americans colluded with Russia. That's another thing we just found out. So there might be something around that. And there's investigation surrounding his inaugural committee, investigation involving his foundation.
Yeah.
There's the investigation involving the payoffs with women. The list goes on and on. And a lot of those things, you know, I'm guessing they might have enough evidence to indict him. Obviously, in the individual one case, he can be indicted, but you know, I don't think they're gonna move forward with it, because again, it's right now it's just they think he's above the law. He definitely thinks he's above the law, but like any other fad that's ever happened in American history, this will never die off. This will no, like when stuff hits the fan, when we need an American president, whenever that is, and he's not there, that's when he leaves office. But my hope is that it doesn't come to like a place where we get attacked and he's to blame because he didn't do something, like where the power gets turned off in major cities. And then he's standing there like, oh, I guess we should have done something about that internet. Like, you know, and I can see that happening. And that, again, if it's in a major city, you know, we order our stuff through Amazon. We get groceries from the grocery store. If we have no power, no fridge, no AC, you have the spread of disease immediately. You know, in major cities, you have riots that'll happen. It can destroy this country. And again, we don't want a president that can leave us open like this. Mm-hmm. And that's the danger, is the red light before 9/11 is blinking the same way. I think James Clapper said that same way now. And it has been since he started. So, I mean, we're in true danger for real. Like, it's not political like talk. It's real.
Absolutely. And right in the middle of all of this, he's gutting DHS. It's un-goddamn believable. I mean, do you think, Scott, that he's lucid enough to realize that the presidency is the only thing protecting him from prosecution in prison?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think so here's the thing. What I've learned about, I just did an interview for this documentary Unfit, which talks about his mental fitness. I think that based on that, he's called a monster, defined in psychiatric terms. Mm-hmm. And they have the capability to decipher logical situations like that. You have to think of him as not an evil mastermind, but you do have to think of him as, you know, he does know what he's doing, and he's aware of what he's doing to the level where, but he enjoys it. He loves it when people are angry. He loves making people mad. He loves attacking people. He loves revenge, and he gets off on it. He really does. Like, I mean, he talks about it over the years where he's like, I never forget a name that went after me. And when the time is right, when the time is right, that's when I strike. And he's said that on camera before. And I really think if you go behind the scenes, it's more evil than you think. I mean, here's a good example, and this is mind blowing to a lot of people, but he doesn't write most of his tweets.
And
I knew you knew that. They do intentional typos in group meetings where they'll actually get together and they'll plan to have a typo in one of his tweets.
Really? Like Melanie. Let's talk about that, because that I was completely unaware of that. And of course, there's been massive amounts of speculation about those typos as to whether or not there's some sort of quizzling inside the White House who's doing it deliberately to embarrass the president and embarrass the White House, or if it's something that is somehow coming down from Trump. Like, you know, the thing I always remember, Scott, is Conan O'Brien played a clip of Donald Trump back around the time of the election. And it was just to illustrate how Donald Trump is so iconoclastic and such a weirdo that he looks at everything in a different way. So here's the example that Conan presented a video in which what they wanted to do was show Donald Trump sitting in a chair, simply pouring himself a glass of water. So Donald Trump takes the pitcher of water, pours it into the glass, and then takes the glass and with that Cheshire Cat grin on his face, dumps the glass of water all over the table in a long row of water running the length of the table. And then he sits, you know, with his hands in that dick tent posture, and then looks around at the camera crew going, now, wasn't that funny? Wasn't that hilarious? And it's like, what are you talking about? So he's so utterly strange in his view of all of this shit. It makes entirely every bit of sense that this is the kind of administration that he would run. These are the kind of things that he enjoys watching. He enjoys watching the chaos. He enjoys taking the risk. It's what, like an adrenaline rush for him or something, isn't it?
Yeah. How far can I push it? How far can I push this issue? How much can I talk on Twitter? Can I cuss? And it's just, he pushes the limits. But again, with a lot of that stuff, I mean, I remember with President Obama, they would run it through national security agencies before he would tweet something out. So it didn't affect the world order. You know, he would, they would go through more than just whatever he's doing. And I think a lot of what I've heard is that he will sometimes pass post-it notes to his aide, whoever's with him, and it'll be like two words, and then they'll draft a tweet and he'll be handed a piece of paper back. And that'll be what the tweet was sent out. He likes paper, I guess. I don't think he knows how to use a phone. I once criticized him for not ever seeing him on video tweeting. Like, I've always wanted to see that.
Yeah.
And he responded sort of like, I think it was like a day later, where he tweeted out a picture of him on his phone with his pointer finger acting like he was tweeting. And I was like, this is just so awkward, but I don't think it feels like Don Jr. or somebody like that is actually doing the tweeting for him. And it seems also like the White House, although they have meetings about it, there's a lot of times where they are genuinely caught off guard by like what he tweets. And so there's gotta be, I think, well, we've got to change the rules about that and how a president can present himself. But I mean, it really is, it's a propaganda machine. Mm-hmm. And I think that people aren't realizing that how manipulated and how it's a distraction tool and how he doesn't mind being embarrassed for a typo, because he'd rather you talk about that than the fact that he's credibly accused by more than 21 women of sexual misconduct.
Plus, it wins it wins him cred with the folks. It wins him cred with the Red Hats. They love that he's an idiot, right? Just like they are, right?
that is absolutely 100% true.
Yeah,
he loves to play to what his crowd is. I think he calls, and this is him, his words, not mine. He calls his followers stupid, and he prides them in that because he's like he can control them like little lemmings.
Yeah,
and he knows it, and he can play with this kind of like mania that he's got going on in his head. But you know, it may be a ping pong ball in there, but it is bouncing around. You know, he definitely has a screw loose. But yeah, we have to keep in mind is there's a lot of this. Most of it is intentional, and that makes it so. I think it's hard for people to comprehend that they were to have meetings to have tweets to distract from crisis, like real crisis. And it's so deranged that you don't want to think about, oh, how they're testing keywords that they got from Cambridge Analytica or their new offshoot. You know, we don't want to assume that they're polling in regards to what, you know, can trigger people.
Yeah.
Like we don't want to assume, but they're doing it. Mm-hmm. They're doing all that, and they're doing things intentionally. They love triggering people and distracting them from something else. Now, what it backfires a lot of times.
Yeah.
Where you know we've found out a way to, you know, bring it to attention, but also walk and chew gum. So you know, if it's something stupid he says, a lot of times we'll be able to play off that and then use that whatever's elevated a hashtag or a trend. And use that to present examples of other things that he's done stupid, but talk about policies, talk about, you know, things he's done that are illegal, things like that.
Yeah. Well, he actually, I think he thinks what he's doing now, going back to what we were saying with regard to a constitutional crisis, I mean, he thinks what he's doing now is just in his own political best interest. But the fact is, and Lawrence O'Donnell laid this out in a pretty convincing argument last night, that Nancy Pelosi is allowing Trump to walk into his own propeller on all these things, allowing him to invite impeachment by continuing to, I mean, stupidly, well, I don't know. I mean, either he knows it or he doesn't know it. He's continuing to obstruct justice. I mean, his stonewalling of Congress is more and more obstruction. And it seems like, at least based on Lawrence's theory from last night, that he's just walking into it. He's just actually allowing himself to get trapped, right?
Yeah, I mean, and I've got an opportunity to work with the speaker for over a decade. And I can say, you know, here and there campaigns and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And it's always, you know, she's playing chess. He's playing Connect Four. It really is that, you know, he is his worst enemy. And I think that a lot of this, you know, she catches a lot of flack sometimes, for, you know, not moving on impeachment immediately, but like in the background, you see that I didn't actually know this until last night, that it will restrict our investigatory ability, because it would move on to the Senate. And apparently we would not be able to do public hearings in the same way. And so there's a mix of that. And also I think, you know, she's held off so that people can call for it.
Yeah.
Because if we move on it immediately, so there's a lot of layers to it, to different things that she does. And but there's always rhyme or reason, and there's always a long game in there. And so I think with Trump, he takes the bait every time, because he thinks he's smarter than her. And that's where, you know, he goes wrong. Cause that's where politics and political experience and having experienced aides around you can map out what she's actually trying to accomplish in regards to something she says or does. And he's letting himself be exactly right. Like he walks in the propeller every single time.
Yeah.
And he thinks he wins. He actually thinks he wins. And he usually just, you know, eventually he figures out he has egg on his face. And it's like, oh, wait, why? Like he thought, he's a great example. And it's simple, and this was not planned at all. But I remember when Speaker Pelosi was at the State of the Union, and she clapped in his face.
Yeah.
And he turned around, and he thought that it was a genuine clap.
Yes.
And, you know what I mean? Like, and that, you know, that's just, that's one of the best pictures I've ever seen, because he looks back, and he's like, yeah, you're clapping for me. And then you see the picture and it's like, oh, no, she's not. That's not what's happening. Like, you just made a terrible mistake there, buddy.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think it's going to get worse in that regard, because again, it's not, you know, she knows what she's doing.
Yeah.
And she is a brilliant legislator. And,
your familiarity with Speaker Pelosi being solid background for this question. I mean, do you think that she is being political with her remarks about impeachment, for example, like just allowing the evidence to lead the way toward impeachment without pushing it forward herself? Is that sort of the strategy that she's employing? Or is she absolutely earnest and genuine when she says, you know what, he's not worth it? I mean, what do you think?
I think there's probably a mix, I would guess. If you think about it like this, and this is not meant to redirect from your question, but if it were her choice, I would assume that she would impeach him or remove him from office.
Yeah.
But she needs Republican support, and without that, it looks like a completely partisan process. They have a way to defend it immediately. And so I think we have to, as boring as it may be, we have to represent the case to the American public for impeachment.
Yeah.
And then that leads to impeachment. And so it's not, I wish it could be overnight, but the more I study it, it seems the better play here is to get Republicans on board, and that, or at least some. Like, you can't go at this alone.
Yeah, in order to get them on board, you can't give them reading material. You have to make a show, right? You have to have hearings.
Yes,
you have to have Mueller testifying, because you say, well, just read the Mueller report. They're going to go, are there illustrations? No, and there's no large text either. That seems to me as if that's another smart aspect of the speaker's approach on all of this, is that, yeah, we got to give them a show first, right?
Right. And people are obviously outraged. And I mean, I ran the first impeachment campaign ever. And I can tell you that, I obviously a supporter of removing him from office. Mm-hmm. And right now, even though I wanted to rush right into it, too, I realized we can't do this if we move for impeachment. We can't do this and that. And it just, we don't want to limit ourselves. And then also, I don't think that she's thinking about 2020 political considerations as in, oh, we can't impeach because it'll look bad. I definitely don't think that. But I do think that there's some thoughts about, you know, like what is good for the country. I think that's the genuine sentiment there, is that she actually cares and does not want to drag us through an impeachment process if there's not some kind of bipartisan move towards it.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just, it will be conveyed as a partisan process, and it will seem like it.
Yeah. It seems like that's something that needs to happen. Absolutely. And obviously, I've spent a lot of time talking about this and writing about it, is that impeachment, to me, has to happen. There's really few other options for holding Donald Trump accountable. But at the same time, there's a process that has to take place, right? Where it's not only a matter of holding hearings and presenting evidence and then making a case and then having a vote in committee and then a vote on the floor. It's more than that, right? There's a public face that has to go along with this. The other side has to know that the evidence is leading the way rather than this partisan drive to get him now. And it seems to me as if while I'm screaming get him now, Nancy Pelosi, who's on a different strata of the debate, has a responsibility to do certain things along, you know, based on her own political instincts. And it seems to me as if that's the smart way to approach it.
Right. Yeah. And you know, I don't want to think that I'm like, you know, I disagree with every politician. So there's not, we don't agree on everything, but you know, I did not agree on the initial approach because I was like, wait, what? Like, you know, we need to do something now. Like, let's move on it. And then I, you know, instead of rushing, I went ahead and started talking to people about it. And I was like, huh, like, okay, that doesn't make sense if we do it this quickly, and we can't do this if we do that. So, it, you know, and there was a lot of, I think one of the key things that you had mentioned that needs to happen before anything is Mueller testifying in front of Congress.
Yeah.
That, because seeing that and piecing that together, that's going to override a lot of propaganda about the report, because that's when we actually will hear it from him. And I think what he says is going to be gold, and that's going to be, you know, another hill for Trump to climb. But eventually, you know, I think exposing him to be the criminal he is in any way possible, and if it has to hold off impeachment for us to do that, then fine. That's what needs to happen. But we need to make sure that Republicans who don't come on board seem like they're criminals because they're not moving on it. And at this point, I feel that way, but I don't think a lot of other people do. And we need more in regards to everything. And we also need to, you know, they need time to get organized for this all and weed through everything. And then there's, you know, things take time in D.C. And that sucks. But I think eventually, like, my hope is that he'll make a deal to resign in regards to, you know, getting his kids off and himself. That's my hope.
Yeah, mine too.
He'll eventually do that and save everybody. I would assume that the Republican Party, like, you know, they flip and they'll turn on anybody. So, yeah. Well, of course they'll turn on Trump, but they would have to do it together, and they'd have to do it swiftly, and they'd have to do it in a way where, you know, they think about it. Because the people that I know in Congress that are Republicans are genuinely scared, about
what are they specific? What specifically is scaring them?
Well, they're scared of threats and also career ending things. And I think that he probably has things on them. He does background checks on everybody, ones and does investigations and dangles stuff over people's head. It'd be terrible if this came out on NBC News, like that you cheated on your wife.
Right.
Like he says stuff like that all the time.
Does that explain Lindsey Graham? Does the fact that Donald Trump has compromat on members of Congress, does that explain why Graham did that, you know, 180 degree flip from, you know, before McCain died and then after McCain died? Is that what happened?
I don't know. You know, I will say that it's interesting. It's weird that he, you know, took that kind of line. But my guess is that Trump promised him everything. You'll get reelected. I'm going to do everything for you. You won't have to worry about a thing. You'll get all the money you need. I'll come down there and campaign if it's right. Like, all those promises.
It's amazing. And, that people still buy that from him.
It's not that hard to get blackmail. Yeah. If you, like, you know, for Trump, I would assume to get blackmail on somebody, you just, you know, have them at Mar-a-Lago. And, you know, he's like, oh, I have this video of you and this person in your room last night. Like, I can envision that totally happening. I mean, you know, look at Jared Kushner's dad. He did that exact thing to his sister. So his brother-in-law, where he hired a prostitute, filmed the act where he cheated on his wife and then sent it to his sister.
Yeah.
And it's like, and tried to blackmail them. And instead they went to the feds. And he got prosecuted and went to prison, even as a billionaire. So that's how bad that was. But yeah, I think that the, you know, there's definitely something. I'm guessing it's the promises more than anything else. But, you know, there's a lot of speculation, obviously. But who knows? I mean, I've seen what I thought to be most prominent people do the most terrible things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if anybody would know about that in the Republican Party, Trump would.
Yeah.
So I would definitely not count it out.
Yeah.
Because, again, if you have something on them that's career ending, then what are you going to be willing to do in order to, like, he wouldn't even defend McCain. That's so weird. Like, so he must think that there's something for him yeah. or against him, or both.
Seems to me as if the people who know Donald Trump, at least have interacted with him in some way, realize that he's not capable of earning anyone's respect just on his own, based on his character or his values or any of his behavior or anything like that. Seems to me as if he has to force respect using compromising information and so on, intimidation and whatnot, threats and so on. And that sounds like it's absolutely the case. But, you know, I wanted to mention this, too, before we run out of time, that and this goes back to impeachment, but do you think his most impeachable offense is failing to protect the nation against further Russian attacks against our sovereignty? Should that be article number one in an impeachment process?
You know, that's an interesting point. I think it's either the bribery part of the Mueller report. It's a mm-hmm. short paragraph buried in there, and it says, any kind of money that Trump makes outside of his salary is a bribe, and it should be considered as a bribe and a criminal wow. offense. And so I think like something the most obvious, believable, as in like, you know, it's a hard explanation in regards to Russia. So if we talk about the obstruction part first or the bribery part first, that might be better, but I'm not sure if the order would matter. But I think that is, you know, you have a money trail there that's definite. With the obviously, I consider him to be a traitor to this country, the biggest traitor in the history of the country. You cannot, let alone like I remember when I stubbed my toe. It was a Sunday afternoon, and Every time I get injured, like I got a crown on Monday and then we started the Republicans for impeachment campaign. There's always working in tandem with injury.
God, that's so crazy.
I stubbed my toe and that's when Treason Summit came out. I was like, I'm going to do it. And they're like, okay, whatever. Like, and then it was trending worldwide and a million people had tweeted it the next day, all day. And they started talking about treason and like, is this treason? Da, 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 da. And I'll tell you what, yeah, that was treason. So was bringing the Russians into the White House and giving them intel about Israeli undercover agents or whatever that was. And, you know, the list goes on and on.
Yeah.
And it's all for money. And that's what's sick about it. Like, it's not even, it's about money and, you know, trying to win again. And we're going to be okay with that.
Yeah.
You know, that's treason. He redefined treason. Because this is the cyber war is a war. Mm-hmm. And so I consider that, and there are other measures that they've taken where they hacked into our electrical grids and other things that have been reported. And it's, man, I think it's just going to get, everything is going to get worse.
Yeah.
And again, I think we'll get to a tipping point, as Malcolm Gladwell will say, where we finally reach a point of like, all right, enough. Like, are you serious, dude? Like, are you tweeting still? What are you doing? Mm-hmm. And you know, I think one of the ways to do that is to keep uncovering crimes and prosecuting those around him.
Yeah.
And eventually he won't have people around him to mm-hmm. protect him. And I think that's, you know, when we see people testify, I think people, one thing to keep in mind also is that these investigations could potentially might as well be impeachment investigations because the offenses that they're investigating all lead to impeachment. So we could consider it, you know, kind of a impeachment investigations are already going on without the word impeachment, which would be a stroke of brilliance because then Trump can't say they're trying to impeach me. Well, he's going to say that anyways, but he can't say it with as much credit. So, I mean, you know, I think the road is long. We've made it this far. We're going to be all right, but it's going to take everybody standing up and being louder than we ever have before. We've practiced this, you know, for 3 years now. So now is the time to put everything, feet on the ground. Everybody votes. Everybody fights. Everybody gets as loud as they possibly can and speaks out. Take the time off work and volunteer at the local Democratic parties. Take a lunch break and make phone calls to Republicans in your state, state reps, state senators, and ask them to support impeachment publicly. You know, there's going to be a lot of these different things that, you know, again, we've had a lot of practice, over the years to get this right. So now, you know, it's up to us to relitigate everything and represent everything in the Mueller report and make sure that we keep on pounding at home, mm-hmm. presenting new information. And, you know, I'm going to do my part in trying to push for impeachment still. But my goal now is to give Republicans a platform to be able to speak out and have support from fellow Americans. And so we're going to focus on Republicans for impeachment right. for now. But it really is a great opportunity for us to unite. Sadly, it's against him. But I think we're going to see things change in the coming months, and especially once people learn about impeachment more and how that could restrict us from doing some other things. Mm-hmm. And so we're just, you know, I will continue to push as far as I possibly can.
Thank God.
In regards to getting him out of office, and we will continue our investigations internally to the coalition. Mm-hmm. We will continue to track his movements when he's on the golf course, getting him on video wherever we can, and also digging up old stuff to mm-hmm. remind people who he is, and fighting his fake news and propaganda at a constant. And so, you know, we're in a good spot.
Yeah.
It's just terrible that he's destroying the country slowly. So, you know, I hope that we, I know that people in DC that are Democrats are trying to do everything that they can. But you know, I know we can do more. We can do better.
Yeah.
We can be stronger. We can be more united, and we can be louder. And I think it's just a matter of time. You know, we're going to need, we'll be organizing marches again. We'll be, you know, hitting doors for 2019. And then we'll be working on trying to win back the Senate mm-hmm. And keeping the House. And then obviously I won't be working on any of the presidential campaigns at all. I'm writing a book series about each candidate. And so, you know, we'll be presenting this information so people can be as educated as possible, other policies, where they stand and whatnot. And I think, you know, at the end of all this, this is one of the best, worst things that's happened to America before Trump in general. It exposed a lot of our wounds that were buried.
Yeah.
And I think it helped expose people who for who they really are, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, and that's I think it's in the long run, that's really good for us.
Right,
and I
right.
think also if this didn't happen, we would never have protected ourselves or learned about, oh, my God, like the Internet can affect my real life. Eventually, this would have happened.
Mm-hmm.
So it happened. It's there. Now we need to continue to fight.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line.
So how can people support the Democratic Coalition, Scott?
You can go to democraticcoalition.org. You can check out any of our action landing pages there. Obviously, you can help fund our research efforts.
Mm-hmm.
We also do digital ads and obviously have the best online organizing in the country, and I think in the world probably, because we have 104 hashtags that have trended in 2 years. And, you know, obviously a massive network where we can move, yeah. we can move a lot of people to go from online to in person. And I think that's obviously essential. So we can keep on doing that. So, you know, if you want to join us, it's, at the Dem Coalition on Twitter, and, I'm at Funder, FUNDER on Twitter as well. Join us, you know.
Perfect.
We have I think 500,000 members now, and so we're inching towards that million. Eventually we'll get there.
Sounds great, Scott. It was an extreme pleasure to have you on today. I can't wait to get you back on again so we can continue to cover this ongoing crisis with you, and good luck with everything, and thank you for all of the incredibly hard work that you're doing. It is so important, and I think history is going to remember your footprint in all of this.
Thank you. I really appreciate it, and I appreciate all the work you do, and I'm a big fan of your show and everything you do, and I thanks for taking the time. I'm happy to come back on anytime.
Absolutely. My pleasure. We'll talk to you again soon, Scott.
Sounds good.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Calling all coffee drinkers. If you've been trying to enhance your daily coffee routine, then Quest has got your back with their brand new iced coffees. Now available in two delightfully delicious flavors that'll be sure to add an extra pep in your step. Vanilla latte and mocha latte. Quest has been on a mission to help fuel you with protein-forward foods you'll love. Each bottle of Quest iced coffee is packed with 200 milligrams of caffeine, the same amount as 2 cups of regular coffee, plus 10 grams of protein per serving to help you supercharge your day. And did I mention that they only contain 1 gram of sugar? It might just be time to cheat on your iced coffee with iced coffee. Find Quest iced coffees on Amazon.com/Quest Nutrition. That's Amazon.com/Quest Nutrition.